TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Reclaiming Our Future was the motto of the 10-year anniversary of 9/11 held in 2011 at the historic Herbst Theater. The San Francisco event signaled a breakthrough on 9/11 in two important areas. A trailer for an upcoming movie by Engineers and Architects for 9/11 Truth about the destruction of World Trade Center Building 7 had already gone viral on the internet. Narrated by Ed Asner, it shows the latest research that rebuts the government explanation that office furniture fire caused the freefall collapse of the 47-story building that was not hit by an airplane. Of all the 9/11 issues, the case of Building 7 is the most compelling to date to initiate a new investigation. Architects and engineers are joined by 9/11 family members and first responders who are supporting that demand. Here's an excerpt from the trailer, followed by a talk by Kevin Danaher. He's co-founder of Global Exchange and executive producer of the annual San Francisco Green Festival. He will energetically address the task of reclaiming our future.
Hi, I'm Ed Asner. You are about to hear from architect of 23 years, Richard Gage, AIA, member of the American Institute of Architects and founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Now there are more than 1,500 architects and engineers who say that it could not have been brought down by office fires. They are backed by 9/11 family members who are calling for an independent, unbiased investigation.
I'm Richard Gage. Fires have never before caused the collapse of any skyscraper, even though there are numerous examples of much hotter, larger, and longer-lasting fires in these buildings. And in the case of Building 7, the fire that NIST said started the collapse had actually burned out over an hour before. Yet this 47-story, modern steel-frame skyscraper, which was not hit by an airplane, collapses mostly into its own footprint, like a house of cards, as fast as a bowling ball falling off the side of the building, in just under 7 seconds. Listen to the experts.
Building number 7 descended in free fall for the first 100 feet, which means that there was absolutely no resistance to the descent whatsoever.
NIST has admitted it went into free fall for 8 stories. And going from motionless to free fall instantly, that's a bothersome part of the puzzle because NIST never explained it.
We've got a building that came down in its own footprint, so all of the columns really needed to be severed at the same time in order for that structure to fall the way that we saw.
The symmetry is the smoking gun.
According to NIST, the failure occurred at column 79 on level 12. They're talking about a single columnar collapse or failure that resulted in a total collapse of the building.
The scientific forensic evidence, ignored by NIST, but carefully reviewed by teams of technical professionals, corroborates the hypothesis of explosive controlled demolition. We've traveled to 21 foreign countries and 32 American cities, bringing this evidence to the attention of the public. And we're backed by 9/11 family members and other concerned citizens who are calling for an independent, unbiased investigation.
I'm a family member trying to find out the answers to the murder of 3,000 plus people. The bottom line is that it needs to be investigated properly.
Please look at architects and engineers. People all around the world, scientists all around the world are questioning this. And there's some deep, deep explaining to do.
It took some kind of consciousness raising on my part before I was willing to look at the possibilities. And really, you need to go where the evidence leads.
As an engineer, I have 3 degrees in engineering. I signed that petition for architects and engineers for 9/11 truth some time ago, because the American people absolutely need the truth of 9/11.
Look at the evidence. Any reasonable person who looks at the evidence that's been brought forward has got to come away with the feeling that a real investigation has to be put forward.
We will never heal. This country will never, ever, ever forget that day. We have to demand a new investigation. I want justice here.
The country owns this. We were all victims. You all should want answers. It's not just ours, not just mine. We all lost something that day.
It's distressing for everyone to come to terms with this evidence, but we must pursue the truth wherever it leads. Look at the evidence and decide for yourself.
I'd like to introduce our next speaker. His name is Kevin Danaher. He's written many books, including 10 Reasons to Abolish the IMF and the World Bank, Building the Green Economy, Success Stories from the Grassroots, Insurrections, Citizens' Challenge to Corporate Power, and then there's also Corporations Are Going to Get Your Mama, which is one of my favorites. He was a co-founder of Global Exchange, which does phenomenal work. He's also a producer of the Green Festivals, and he and his wife are pretty famous, too, for like taking over the World Trade Organization stage when they shut down the WTO in Seattle in 1999. Kevin is sort of at the cutting edge of social movements and transitions, and he's a great hero, great friend. Please warmly welcome Kevin Danaher.
Thank you, folks. Thank you very much. It's an honor to be in front of people who have enough courage to challenge the accepted wisdom. On September 11th, I remember coming home and watching the news, and I was a firefighter fighting forest fires in the summer to get through graduate school to get my PhD. And I remember noticing it was black smoke fire. Black smoke fire is a cold fire. It's an oxygen-starved fire. And when I saw those buildings go down, I immediately thought, no, I'm sorry. You know, kerosene, which is jet fuel, does not melt steel. It never has, never will. So what we can learn, the official conspiracy theory, you know, when people say conspiracy, oh, you're conspiracy. No, the conspiracy theory is that a bunch of amateur Arab terrorists got physics to be in abeyance and hijacked four planes. And think about this. You wouldn't fly them into the building early in the morning. You'd wait till executives were there. You wouldn't fly them into an office building. You'd fly them into a nuclear power plant. You wouldn't fly them into the side of the Pentagon that was depopulated, the opposite side from Rumsfeld's office, et cetera, et cetera. Science is on our side. Bill Cosby says, the truth will set you free, but first it'll you off. I was lucky enough to have a PhD advisor who, he would force me to summarize my 676-page dissertation on U.S. policy towards South Africa to fewer and fewer words, and he got me down to a two-word sentence. It was about U.S. government policy, and the sentence was, they lie, right? They were always saying, we abhor apartheid, but... And I remember during the Reagan administration spending a lot of time in southern Africa, and 9 neighboring countries were attacked by the South African military. Refugee camps were bombed. Women and children bombed. The South African government killed people in Paris and London. And when the condemnation would come from the UN, the Reagan administration would veto it, right? So, you know, if our government was willing to lie about all these other things, like killing 2 million Vietnamese, like... I was 18 when they tried to send me to Vietnam, and I knew that they didn't have an army or an air force, so there was no possible threat to us, which is why I didn't go. So why? Collapse of communism in the Soviet Union, that there's your causal factor. As soon as communism is gone, what's the excuse for having a big military-industrial complex, right? Because that's what we were all raised on. I don't know about you older folks in the crowd, but we used to do duck and cover drills where atomic bomb attack by the Soviets, and we'd go out in the hallway and put jackets over our heads like that's going to protect you from an atom bomb, right? It was a terror exercise. It was to scare the crap out of us so we would believe the official line that communism was somehow a threat. So the problem is we have at least some aspects of a democracy. We have a lot of physical evidence. So it's absolutely essential for the imperial elite to keep people scared, because when you're scared, you're stupid. Friends of mine on the left, they say, boy, the U.S. military is so stupid, because when you shoot those drone missiles and you kill those guys, the next day there's like 200 mujahideen with guns in the air saying death to America. That's the goal. That's the objective. Poke the junkyard dog with a stick, he starts to bark, and you say, hey, pay me, I'll protect you from that barking dog. Right? They had to create another credible threat that could be global, that could be believable, that would have a racist element to it, play into all the worst fears of our people. Government's first task after 9/11 was to imprint war on terror. I actually, the only article I've ever gotten published in the Washington Post was the week after 9/11, and I framed it as war or justice. Why treat it as war instead of a crime? If it's a crime, you treat it with police action, and that's actually what's been effective against terrorism. Not guns and bombs and tanks and missiles, right? Because think, you're killing a mosquito with a $5 million missile instead of drying up the swamp of resentment and hatred that's producing the mosquitoes in the first place. So this war framing elevates so-called terrorists to super war status. I mean, it's stupid on the face of it, right? The only reason you would do it is if it was a fake threat and you wanted to scare the American people into believing they need to keep funding a huge military-industrial apparatus. So this is what pissed me off more than anything else. Millions of Americans watch CSI Miami, CSI New York, crime scene investigation. What happens at a crime scene? Yellow police tape goes up around the area and nobody touches a damn thing. It's my husband's wallet. Lady, it's a crime scene. Don't touch it. In both New York and Washington, D.C. on 9/11, the evidence is not only taken away, it is destroyed. The only reason you would do that, break standard operating procedure, is if you had something to hide. Commanders in the military-industrial complex needed to derail talk of peace dividend, right? Remember when that was happening? Oh, Soviet Union collapse, peace dividend. You know, it's like people who say they're disillusioned with Barack Obama. I always say, well, you have to be illusioned before you can become disillusioned. So let's not be illusioned. Let's not expect people in limousines with security guards to solve our problems. They don't know our problems. They don't ride the Mission Street bus like I do, right? So there's no way they're going to fix our problems. It has to come from us, the solution. The Bush administration had its worst legitimacy crisis, remember? Kenny Boy, right? Ken Lay from Enron was Bush's biggest financial supporter. That all got wiped away. And with the destruction of Building 7, the Securities and Exchange Commission offices, with all the Enron files and a lot of other corporate crime files, oh, gee, it all disappears. And now it comes out more recently after this financial collapse of 2008, the Securities and Exchange Commission was destroying files from a lot of these big bank crimes. Interesting. Who had the means, right? What government has overthrown more governments in the world than any other? We're the champs at this. You know that thing, we're number one. We're actually number 37 in terms of healthcare systems, but we are number one in overthrowing other governments. And, you know, my main area of research over the decades has been U.S. foreign policy. And there's a long history. It goes back prior to the Bolshevik Revolution. We were sending troops into other countries to get their resources, keep the labor cheap. That's capital's term. For the workers who work for a dollar a day, it's not cheap. It's very expensive. You know, who had access to Building 7? Look at the tenants of Building 7. When you tell people a simple fact of who were the tenant organizations in Building 7, and that Rudolph Giuliani had this special disaster control center that he wasn't in, and in an ABC TV interview, they asked him, why weren't you in that building? Oh, we were told it was going to collapse, he was told. Later on the campaign trail, when he was running for president, people sandbagged him with video cameras, and they said, who told you that it was going to collapse? And he said, oh, I never said that. It's on videotape. You know, it's like these people lie even knowing that the lies can be disproven. It's amazing. Costs of the war, $3.3 trillion. More than one-fifth of the national debt. Everybody's like, oh, the national debt, the debt ceiling. All right, you want to deal with the fiscal crisis of the U.S. government? It's the military-industrial complex that's the problem. Healthcare and disability costs of veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan is going to amount to almost $600 billion over the next 40 years. Right? We work with doctors in Iraq and there is an epidemic of babies born with no eyeballs in their sockets in Iraq from the depleted uranium that's been powdered all over that country. What percentage of the American people know about the epidemic of babies born in Iraq with no eyeballs in their sockets? That's the part that bothers me the most, the stupidifying of my own people. And I love this country. That's why I get upset about this. I used to live in Washington, D.C., and I swear to God, I would get tears in my eyes when the plane would start coming in over the Jefferson Memorial, where if you go out to the Jefferson Memorial late at night and you read the inscriptions chiseled into the marble, up inside the rotunda, he says, "On the altar of God, I pledge undying hostility to any government restriction on the free minds of the people." Telling a lie of this proportion is worse than any kind of repression, because what you've done is you've put a mistruth deep into people's minds and their hearts. And then people like us have to talk with them and say, "No, please, look at the evidence, you know." So we're having national post-traumatic stress disorder, right? Think about how many young, patriotic individuals signed up to the U.S. military because of 9/11. Right? It was the same crap that friends of mine went to Vietnam. "We got to get those communists." I was like, "Dude, you don't even know what communism is." I had a buddy that was a door gunner on a helicopter. He got shot down. He took a round sideways. It ripped his stomach open. He was holding his intestines in his own hand, and he said it was at that moment that the thought ran through his head, "I don't even know what communism is." He didn't die, luckily. He spent 5 years in a POW camp. Very, very interesting guy to talk to. What percentage of Americans know how many people were killed after 9/11 because of the way they looked? 7 human beings were murdered by other Americans because of the way they looked. There was a Sikh, because he had a turban, they killed him. There was a woman in Oklahoma who these 2 rednecks were beating on her, saying, "Go home." She was a Native American. Yeah. I mean, that's approaching insanity, right? So out of this, we get this whole clash of civilizations, us against them. And this ideology, the imperialist ideology, requires of them, you have to have some inferior group that you're making it okay to repress and control their movements and drop bombs on their mosques, etc. Just imagine the impact on the struggle against racism in this country if we could establish and prove that, in fact, it was not fanatical Muslims who did 9/11. It was people in seats of power within our own system. We're 5% of the world's people consuming 25% of the world's resources and putting out about 25% of the world's pollution. We are the empire at the end of the age of empires. In a world of internet and transparency and everybody having video on their cell phones, you see what's going on in the Middle East, right? The Arab Spring, these uprisings. We have 865 military bases. You know, this doesn't count the secret ones. It doesn't count Iraq and Afghanistan. If we could convert those bases into eco-development platforms, green economy centers, innovation zones, doing organic agriculture, we'd actually, there you get at dry up the swamp of hatred and resentment. And I would like to see, Global Exchange this year, we'll do about 45 trips, group trips to Cuba. I was just down there in July with a group of 40 green MBA students. And the idea crossed my head, ooh, we could do a conference in Guantanamo, the city of Guantanamo, and bring together all these development, architecture, engineering experts about how we're going to convert Guantanamo Naval Base from being a torture center into being an eco-development platform, an eco-university. Wouldn't that be nice? The right wing in the U.S. has had a subtext to all of their tactical struggles, was immigration, whatever. The subtext was government is bad. So what the left in the U.S. needs to do is have a subtext to all of our struggles. Government is us. Government is us, okay? It's not good or bad. If it's bad, it's our fault, and it's our responsibility to fix it. We can't think that voting once in a while for some old, rich, white, male corporate lawyers, because that's basically who runs our country. You know, it's like if you said lesbian carpenters should run the country, people would say, no offense against lesbian carpenters, but they're a small percentage of the population. Old rich white male corporate lawyers are a very small percentage of the population, but they run our country. So think, the United States was the first country to establish the principle that government is a derivative institution. It is secondary. It derives its authority from we the people, and that's why our most precious document, the Constitution, starts with those words, we the people. That's a radical concept. And that concept is out there in the streets around the world. We work in about 30 different countries at Global Exchange. People love that part of the United States. They hate our corporations. They hate our government policy. But the basic principles, the Bill of Rights, the right of free speech, the right to assemble, the right to address government for grievances and not be killed, right, not be shot dead, those things are still honored around the world. So there's a solutionary movement out there. And I want to remind people, you know, when you're talking to Christians, remind them that Jesus got violent one time and one time only. He didn't pick kings or tax collectors. He picked bankers because they were defiling God's temple. Who runs the world? Bankers. Are they defiling God's house, the planet? You bet they are. So we're less violent than Jesus, right? We're not saying throw their stuff on the ground. We're saying change these institutions. You have all of these different movements, and they're starting to come together now. And that's what's freaking out the people who are running the empire, because they have to at least kowtow and say the word democracy once in a while. And that's our tool, is being able to mobilize people and put people out in the street. So what we need mostly is courage. I have really good friends who are solid leftists who I've gotten arrested with at World Bank IMF protests. And when I raise this issue, they say, oh, Kevin, don't even go there. They just refuse. They do this, you know. Okay, well, that's sad. That's sad. And we need to reach out to them, because we've all faced moments of lack of courage. We all know what it's like. You know, the big guy on the street who threatens you and you realize he'll kick my ass and you run away because you're smart. We've all had those moments. And that's what people are experiencing now. And we need to be generous of spirit and reach out to those people and not fire hose them. Don't you know the facts of 911? Because that just freaks people out and drives them away and makes them think we're nutty, which some of us are. I confess to being nutty. You know, we need to get up on our hind legs, you know, and get mobilized and get out in the street. Cynicism, which you hear a lot, cynicism is what passes for insight when courage is lacking. Cynicism comes from a Greek root, kynikos, K-Y-N-I-K-O-S. It means like a dog. No offense to dogs. This is the first ever global revolution. Every revolution up until now was a national revolution where the revolutionaries sought to gain control in the capital city. When the Zapatistas rose up in southern Mexico in 1994, they did not say, we want to get Mexico City and control Mexico. They rose up against a particular corporate economic model that was destroying their forests and starving their children. And they said, we'd rather die on our feet than live on our knees. The Mexican military at that time had the physical ability to destroy the Zapatistas. And the reason they couldn't was all around the world, people rose up in solidarity with the Zapatistas. We emptied our office and went right down and occupied the Mexican consulate on Market Street. And we sat down and said, you want your office back? You get on the phone and you call your people in Mexico City. And you tell them right now they better pull those people off. So we're going through a paradigm shift. Guns and money versus facts and moral authority. So we have science and spirituality on our side. They have guns and money. Guns and money are temporal. They dry up and blow away in the wind. They're not everlasting. Facts and moral authority, our main tools, are much stronger than guns and money. Dr. King said what will win in the end is unarmed truth and unconditional love. That's the power we have in this movement. The challenge is not a burden, it's an opportunity. History has given us an opportunity to change the course of history by just speaking the truth. That's all. By being a little bit ballsy or overy or, you know, whatever you want to call it, and speaking the truth to people. And as somebody in the film said, ask them questions. Ask them questions, right? Take a steel girder and put it in a swimming pool full of kerosene and let it burn for days. It's not going to melt, okay? That just doesn't happen. So we need a really long-term view on this. We're all, you know, I'm one of these get it done yesterday kind of people too. You know, I'm very impatient. But we have to realize the cathedral builders in Europe and those cathedrals that took 400 years to build, the people who did the foundation layer, they knew that they would not see the final product of their work. But they knew they had to do very solid, precise work because of all the weight that was going to come on top of their work. That's our role. We are the foundation layers of a different world. And And when you lay a foundation, it has to be very solid and very precise. So we don't need to exaggerate. We got tons of facts on our side, right? We got tons of evidence, and it's been collected. And this, the new film stock from Architects and Engineers, I blast it out, and you know, people write back to me and go, "My God, I didn't realize." A lot of people just haven't thought enough about it. So we've already won. Think. If there was global voting, and that's coming, the internet, you know, we're going to have global voting. If we had a global vote on things like, should we take all the military spending and put it into healthcare and education? We would win that vote. We would win that vote, right? Should we save the environment or continue destroying it? Should women have equal opportunity with men? Yeah, there'd be some idiot men who would vote against that. But the majority would vote the way we would vote. So we've already won, but we are suffering from the cult of powerlessness. Oh, God, the system, man. It's just the man. The man's in your head, okay? The man's in all our heads, and we got to pull those things out and throw them away and be empowered to be the citizens of this country, changing the course of this country, because we are the empire. And if we can bring the empire down with a soft landing, there'll be millions of people around the world that will thank us for it. The prime directive is from William McDonough. How do we love all the children of all species for all time? Thank you very much. I appreciate your attention.
That was Kevin Danaher, co-founder of Global Exchange and executive producer of the annual San Francisco Green Festival. He's also lucky to be the husband of Code Pink founder Medea Benjamin. Danaher was recorded on September 11, 2011, at the Herbst Theater San Francisco at the 10th commemoration of 9/11, organized by Carol Brouillet and the Northern California 9/11 Truth Alliance. Come back for part two of this program for another energetic and positive take on the future beyond 9/11 by Anodea Judith, founder and director of Sacred Centers. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can get information on how to order an audio CD with Kevin Danaher and Anodea Judith by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation or CD order keeps this program on the air. Call anytime at 707-463-2654. For information on how to order, you can get your CD by mail or credit card by phone or online on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.